Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 15, delivered on October 9, 2018. The title of this lecture is Review for the Midterm Exam.
Today, review for the midterm. The midterm has two categories. Category 1 has two questions, and Category 2 has two questions. You answer one of the two questions in each category. You answer one of the two questions in each category. Do not answer two, or I will take off half your points on the exam. Answer one question in each. Don't answer all the questions and say, just give me credit for the best that I did. Lol, no, don't. It already takes quite a bit of effort to grade 400 essay exams. Now, about the exam structure, I put up a grading rubric. You can find it in the Resources tab in ReggieNet. It lays out how many points for how many, for what. As far as spelling, grammar, punctuation, and all that, each question is worth 50 points. 10 of those points are for spelling, grammar, and punctuation. Complete sentences, no more than two sentences. If you have to answer in more than two sentences, you don't know the answer, and you're not going to be ready for business. When a boss says, what's the answer to this? He doesn't want your term paper. He doesn't want your dissertation. Just answer the questions. Two sentences, complete, no symbols, no text messaging. You are writing as professionals because that's what I'm getting you ready for. When my students go out there in the business world, they actually are known for the way they communicate, the way they stand out from the average student who comes with a degree. Again, an answer should not have a formula in it. It should not have a graph in it. A formula and a graph, well, those are wonderful things, but they are crutches. If you have to give me a formula, you don't understand. I want you to show me that you understand the answer that you're giving me. Again, don't abbreviate. Don't put parentheses. Don't ever start any sentence with I think, I feel, or I believe. You just say what you have to say and get done with the question. You have an hour and 15 minutes to do this. It should take you about 20 minutes to answer the questions. Spend 10 minutes reading your answers. Don't just do this like text messaging, slap out an answer and then post it. You're being graded 10 points on content, on grammar, and then 40 points on content. I'm going to go what else was I going to tell you? But like I said, there's a grading rubric. It looks like there's a point problem, one little place in there. I'll have to fix that. But it gives you the layout for answers, how many points you get for doing this, how many points you get for that, and it's fairly comprehensive. I am going to go through what I think you should know. I'm not giving you specific questions. I used to do that, and I got group answers. And I don't really like giving group grades, and we might as well start giving out group degrees if we're going to keep this nonsense with group thinking up here and other places. So you have to, you're not going to get actual exact questions, but I'm going to give you good. Let me show you something, for example. Now, back in the day, I would say, here are 20 questions. The questions on your exam will be from these 20. And unfortunately, what I get is people running to the internet for answers. And that was, almost inevitably, they'd lose all the points. Here's one. I told students, okay, one of the questions you might be asked is, what's a yield curve? So everyone ran to the internet. They got this answer right here and put it down, and they lost all the points. They went from an A to a C, thinking that the internet had something to tell them. The internet is garbage in and it's garbage out. You ask garbage questions, you'll get garbage answers because it's made for people who don't want to learn. This answer was completely wrong, and well, it was fundamentally wrong, and no one cited where they got it, so there was a plagiarism there. And so they were all pissed off at me, and you notice I don't care. Don't go to the internet. Go to your notes. I've got the podcasts all up at isu-prof.com. Spend the next few days just hanging out there and looking at that. And reading your notes, going through your podcast. And if you were sneaking a computer and trying to take your notes on a computer, you're going to be dead on the exam. I guarantee you, the people who use computers have not been listening in class. They have no fundamental knowledge. And I'll just crucify you on the exam because I'll know you don't. That's the hard part of it. The good part is that most people do well. You rise to the occasion. I mean, this is your chance to get through. Also, I do want to make sure you understand that I'm not asking math questions on here. I can beat you up all day with that Cengage stuff. This isn't that. I mean, you're showing me you have a fundamental understanding of what I said in the classroom. That means you're writing for me. You're not doing math and... Like I said, I can do that all day long with the computers. Now, I'm going to tell you what I think you should know, broadly speaking, and then you can ask me questions. If you ask me a question, is this going to be on the exam? I'll say, if it's not, I'll just say no. Don't worry about that. So the first thing is that the two categories, category one is cash flow. Category two is investments. Now, as far as category one, the cash flow category, it is absolutely important that you understand the difference between net income and cash flow and free cash flow. What is in net income that is not in free cash flow? And what is in free cash flow that is not in net income? In other words, accountants put things in that we don't want, and accountants leave stuff out that we really do want. Show me that you know those kinds of things. That you understand what we mean by cost in finance, as opposed to what accountants mean by cost. Show me you understand that difference. When you're looking at cash flow, when you're looking at financial statements, ratio analysis is important, but you also have to understand how to interpret ratios. Many times there's no such thing as a ratio that's right. It has to do with a lot of things. You could have a return on assets that is rising. That's wonderful, unless it's for the wrong reasons that it's rising. Make sure you know that. Why would I be concerned? Why do I need to look behind the numbers? Yeah. Well, they could actually, some of the numbers could be causing. Okay. You, sir, come to my office and you look really great. You're in a great three-piece suit. I know. You can't fight me. Okay. But you're a zombie. I mean, I didn't realize it at first, but then as I look at you, you know, you're like decaying. Okay, so he looks great at first, but then I look under the surface. Yep, rotten flesh and the distinct smell of brains you've been eating. Okay. Fortunately, it was from Illinois Wesleyan students. So you're still hungry, obviously. Understand that you've got to show me, okay, liquidity. Yeah, it's great when you've got a lot of money on hand to pay bills, but that there's also a downside to that. Remember Netflix. Yeah, the liquidity was ridiculously high, but... Why is that not always a wonderful thing? You, madam, I come to you, I say, do you have money? You say, yes. How much? You say, I got $1,000 in my pocket. I said, this is incredible. This is wonderful. But there's a downside to that. What's the downside? No. I wouldn't borrow money from you. You're a very mean lender. If I don't pay you, you hurt me. You break my kneecap. No, it's because you're not using that money to invest in anything. How much interest are you making with that money in your pocket?
None.
You see, liquidity is wonderful until you realize, okay, every drop of liquidity means that's a drop of not earning money funds. You need to know the priority of claims of different types of investors. There are two fundamental types of investors in a company. Who has the first dibs? Who has the last dibs? Again, who has the first dibs? Who has the last dibs? Second, what does that mean about risk of these two types of investors? And finally, what does that mean about expected return of these two types of investors? You okay with this? Again, there are two fundamental types of investors in a company. One of those types of investors has the first claim, the other type of the investor has the last claim. Well, what does that mean about the risk that these two types of investors are taking relative to each other? And as a consequence of the risk difference, what are the expected returns of the two types of investors? Am I right when I say the greater the risk, the greater the return? No. I left out a word and I trapped you. I got you. Ha ha. What did I leave out? Do you know what's going to happen to you tomorrow?
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
What?
No. Do you know?
No, I don't.
You don't? But you expect it to be a good day. I mean, it's like Winnie the Pooh and Piglet. What day is it, Piglet? Why, it's tomorrow, Pooh. Well, shit, I blew yesterday. That's what Pooh says. No. What does that have to do? Will you please concentrate? Expected return. Expected. You don't know what's coming, but you can have an expectation of it. Okay? Be sure that you understand that there is no certainty about tomorrow. That's why there is risk. Risk means that there is a lack of certainty. And so that risk is the driving force behind the expectation of return. You, madam, could have gotten a job right out of high school. You could have worked as, you know, a greeter at Walmart. And then they promote you to cashier. And then they start paying you $9 an hour. Good times are ahead. But instead, you decided to come to college. You put a huge amount of money forward. Are you sure you're going to get a great job?
Yeah.
You should not be. You should not be. It is an expectation. There's no guarantee. There's an expectation. This is not going to happen to any of you, I hope to God. But I was up at the Woodfield Mall a couple of years ago, and I went into one of the stores. In the men's section, there was a guy there. He looked like he was about 250 pounds. He recognized me. He'd been my student 15 years before. He was very bitter about his life. 2 divorces, 4 kids, and he was working in the men's department at, I think it was that Macy's? I don't recall, but he was pissed off about his life. He wasted his money. Well, actually, he was just an unambitious ass. But the point was that it's expectations. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You could be sucked up by an alien mothership and be taken to Cow Planet, because they usually suck up cows, but you were in that field and you got taken with them. And so you have to organize a rebellion with the cows and then seize the mothership and then take the mothership with the cows to a new planet where all of you organize an army of cows. I know, right? No, not wow. Moo. Moo. Okay. Now, the next thing that I want you to understand about cash flow. Obviously, it's not going to hurt you to understand how we measure risk. But don't focus too much on that. Because, like I said, this is more about the understanding of the concept than it is about numbers themselves. Actually, I could put the exam up here on the screen for you so you could see it. Right? I know.
Showing us the answers won't guarantee we will know them.
Well,
just saying. Yeah.
Let's talk about investments. What do I mean, madam, by appropriateness of investment? What do I mean by that? If you're an advisor, what is appropriateness? Why is that important to you as an advisor? Appropriateness in investment. You got anything for me?
No.
Okay. You, sir. Appropriateness.
Appropriateness as an advisor for what?
For investments.
Well, you should probably wear lots of clothes.
Lots?
Lots?
Yeah.
What, like Nanook of the North?
Yeah.
See, that's just creepy, man, because underneath those clothes, I still know what's happening, and it's not right. It's not right at all. Okay, appropriateness. Yeah, go ahead.
So, like, the appropriate investment
for the person's age who is invested. Yahtzee. What else? What else? Age, what? You got any other ones? Well, actually, that's an interesting one I usually don't talk about. It's that if I've got an investor with millions of dollars, I'm probably going to have a different pattern of investment advice than with someone who's got like 20,000. That's a point I didn't even bring up, but it is valid. Go. What their standing is, are they wealthy? Are they poor? Are they young? Are they old? Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, we've got to worry about that a lot. Appropriateness also has to do with where a person is in his life cycle. So, for example, you, sir, could be a 25 and be up and rising, making $80,000 a year, and you live, you're single, you have a small apartment in the suburbs of Chicago, and all that kind of stuff. You could be exactly the same age, but have like a wife, 5 kids, and maybe 2 homes with mortgages. So even with the same age, they have different, there's a different appropriateness to the investment strategy that you would take. It also has, of course, to do with other things too, but I want you to make sure that you can answer me if I talk about appropriateness of investments. Why, and also, you got to tell me, why is diversification important? Yeah? Okay. Good. You got to talk to me about these kinds of things. I keep bitching about, don't just buy a single stock. When you hear these people talking about, I recommend that you buy this stock, that is specifically irresponsible. It is one of the damnable things about television finance experts and these news people that write on the internet is that they tell you to buy naked on stocks instead of in the context of portfolios, in the context of who you are and where you are in your life. You, sir, are you a wild and crazy guy or a very safe, risk-averse guy?
Depends, I guess.
No, don't say depends. That's what you wear when you're my age. No, not my age. No, older. Crazy or not crazy? Are you a conservative kind of person? Know yourself. That's an important thing. And when they say, well, this is a stock that's going to go up, they don't tell you about the risk. They don't tell you about the beta. They don't tell you to do this in the context of a well-diversified portfolio. They never, ever say this. That's why you're in my class, so you can learn how to be a complete mean jerk like I am when it comes to that kind of irresponsible investment advice. And I would like to have you be able to answer me and show me that you understand that concept. Do show me, make sure that you know how to deal, what I mean by efficient markets. Let's try this. You, madam.
Yes.
I got a stock. It is undervalued. Okay, it's undervalued. It's like $15 a share. And really, that stock is worth $30 a share. There is, and I'm going to use exactly what they say on the TV shows, there is lots of upside potential. It's so undervalued. What do you say to me when I tell you that?
I don't care.
Why?
Because if it's not in a diverse portfolio, then, I mean, if I invest all my money in it, it could just...
Oh, you could get your ass beaten on this one, yeah. And there's something else going on, too. Go ahead. What?
What was the topic?
Efficient markets.
Okay.
Really? The hell, man? Okay. You, sir. Or you, ma'am. No, I see him. Easy. God. Well, either of you. Just don't hate. Okay? Now, the thing here is... Why? What do you say to me? This stock is undervalued. Do you notice that there is a hurricane coming down right here? I mean, it's just like... No, I'm serious. I mean, it's just like, how are you living with that? Wait. Oh, yeah. My Lady Claire all here. Okay, come on, concentrate. Why is this a problem? It's an undervalued stock. Well, there's an easier answer. Are you telling me that millions and millions of the best traders on earth using the most powerful artificial intelligence programs imaginable, trading at the rate, and in some cases they can see the stock price 100 milliseconds into the future, are you telling me that every trader on earth has missed this incredible deal? Yeah, I smell a rat. No, there is not such a thing as an undervalued stock. There's some idiot who's trying to promote it because he's getting something on the side. If he can get enough fools like you to buy it, well, yeah, the price will go up and then he'll dump on it. That's called pump and dump. I used to do it. That was part of how I made my money. And I can tell you now because the statute of limitations is over on that. Except in a couple of states that I don't go to because I don't like those states anyway. Utah comes to mind. Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Idaho. I don't want to go to those states anyway. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Say that again. First things first, if they're saying undervalued, you say bullshit. Because undervalued, you're telling me that there is, it's sort of like oh, okay, I need you to pay me $10 because there's gold right out there in the hallway. No one has seen it yet. It's just sitting there, bruh. You see what the problem is? Really? How could that possibly be happening? The pump and dump, you look for a promise or someone who's trying not to say, I guarantee you, but everything he or she is saying is like a guarantee of it. Smell that there is someone promising something that really is not likely to be the case. Yeah. I smell that lots of times, but I also smell a lot of people. I mean, there are so many famous names in stocks and bonds that you guys haven't heard of that are behind schemes. The reason they make money is because the world is so full of suckers who want something for nothing. You know, I get in the email every day these ads for, you know, Russian women wanting to meet me. You know what happens when I actually connect with one of them? Her name is Olga, and she lifts logs for a living. No, it's not going to happen. If it sounds too good to be true, trust me, it's not going to happen. You see, that's the problem, is that we play on people's greed. We use people's vanity. We make people feel special when they're not special at all. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, God, no, not for this. Look, I mean, you could... Oh, okay, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up. You can have a 4x6 note card, both sides. 4x6 note card, both sides. And it's actually not going to help you on the exam as much as what it's going to do is it's going to help you focus your study. Yeah. Well, you need to kind of have a good idea of ratios, but it's not going to be to the point where a couple of them know your return on assets, your return on equity, you know, and understand what I mean by liquidity. And also, another one that's kind of important, remember when I made a big fuss about the difference between market cap and the accounting stockholders' equity? You remember when I made a big fuss about that? Make sure you understand what market, how we calculate market cap, so that you can say, okay, the difference is this, and which one do we care about in finance? Know that, and why is that the one we care about in finance? Do we care about what the accountants say the total value of the stockholder's position is, or do we care what the market says it is? That should be pretty easy. Also, no flight to quality. Now, that doesn't mean you say from stocks to bonds, from bonds to gold, from gold to bullets. You give me a formal understanding that you understand the movement of capital in the face of risk. But make sure that you can tell me about it. If I asked you something about flight to quality, you should be able to nail it in one sentence. You don't have to use two sentences. Also, I honestly do have a bullshit stamp. And I just got it re-inked. Don't make me use it. Don't go on and on. If you can't answer me in one or two sentences, you don't understand. You've already shown me you don't get it. I also want you to understand what the relationship is between interest rates and economic activity. In other words, why do I get excited when interest rates go up? Why do markets start getting all kinds of fussy when they see yield curves rising? What is it about interest rates that is so fundamentally important to business? And I don't care if you're in finance, accounting, marketing, human resources, interest rates going up and down matters to you. In a personal way, obviously, but in your professional lives, or what could have been your professional lives before it got snuffed out by interest rates skyrocketing. I've spent almost every the beginning of every class showing you interest rates, showing you stock prices, doing all that kind of stuff. You should be able to handle a question where I say, where are interest rates headed? You should be able to answer it. Why is that a problem? Don't know. Can't tell you. Can't give you an answer. Why? Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, that wind is blocking people's voice. What did you ask? Okay, where are interest rates headed right now? I've shown you every day. As a matter of fact, I even showed you at the beginning of this one. Why is that getting me all kinds of worked up? Why should it get you all kinds of excited? When interest rates do what they're doing now, this isn't the kind of thing where you can have a personal drama on Facebook and tell people how sad it makes you with sad faces. This is life and death and shrapnel and fire at the corner of 5th and Main. Your lives are at stake here, your professional standing. So this is why I want you to show me that you understand why I'm showing you these things, okay? Also, in kind of the same vein, why am I all worked up and keep obsessing about inverted yield curve? Why is that kind of getting me, I keep watching it, waiting for it to happen. It's sort of like this. Understand, you, sir, are in a graveyard. Okay? You guys are all sitting in a graveyard. Now there's these graves, and you see these graves kind of moving the soil. Now there's not a problem because they're just the soil is kind of moving. However, if the soil is moving, it could very well be the case that suddenly out of those graves is going to come zombies. Okay? So you watch the graves because it is very possible that there's going to be a zombie apocalypse in the very near future. Now, moving on. You're like, okay. No, you see, we're watching. This is professionalism. We can have these gurus who say, I feel it. You can have your psychic. You can call a psychic hotline and ask Madame Zabita what she thinks is going to be the outlook for the economy. Or you can do it the way we do it, the hardcore way. Look at the numbers, look at the graphs, and look at the economic environment, and look at the political landscape. Like I said, politics does not drive markets until something really cray-cray happens, and then it starts to make the markets get all kinds of excited. So make sure that you understand why I'm concerned about an inversion of a yield curve. Your turn. Ask me questions. Yeah. Let's start with the inversion of the yield curve. No, yeah, I already told you about that. I mean categories, types of questions. Why? It's the why is because it happens. It just is. This is what happens. You see. Okay. What happens to planets every time the sun they're going around goes supernova? There you go. Are you going to ask why is this happening? No, you're just going to say ah, woof. Doesn't. Why is it that every time I order Chick-fil-A, I'm satisfied afterwards? I don't ask. Red Robin. Why is it that I go and stand at the window of Red Robin and just look in it and mumble to the people, that's right, you eat that cheeseburger, bro. Other questions? Got anything else? Ask me questions. Yeah.
So before you said that if the money isn't going to gold, where is it going?
Well, actually, where this is something that is a little out of the realm of what I would expect you to answer, but it looks like dark markets are absorbing money that is then going into large tracts of real estate in safe places. Think about walled cities. Think about Elysium. If you haven't seen the movie, watch it. Go.
How in-depth do we need to know about the different premiums and rates that make up interest rates?
No, you do not need to know about that too much. You need to know the broad outline, but I don't want you to peel it apart and give me examples and all that. No broad outlines, okay? About, remember I broke down the risk structure of an interest rate, and then you got the risk-free rate and all the pieces and all that. I don't want you to go into huge depth and detail. You've got two sentences. You got to spend it explaining concepts, not in details and tiny little minutiae. Other questions? Okay, I'm going to help you, try to get you started here for God's sake. Madam, I want you to ask me, are you going to ask anything about agency on the exam? Ask me that.
Are you going to ask anything about agency on the
exam? No, why the hell would I do that? No. I forgot. I was going to ask a question about it, and I completely forgot. So, no. See, that's what I want you to ask me. Is this going to be on the exam? Then I can say no, or could be Wabbit. Do you remember Bugs Bunny? Could be Wabbit? That was Elmer Fudd. What? No, I'm not going to ask you very specifically, although I could ask you why money now is worth more than money in the future. But that's more knowing why we care about time value of money, not the detail of it. Go. Oh, you are good. He's good. No, he wanted to know what questions are going to be on the exam. He's good. Too good. Yeah, okay, here. The questions will be on the exam. Yes. They are definitely questions. Moving on. You go ahead.
Do you have to know differences of
like,
types of bonds, like AAA?
No. Not that detail. Go. You might want to look at it just to make sure for background context. The four types of money. Remember the barter, commodity, barter, metal or commodity, fiat, and crypto. Go.
Will there be anything on ethics?
No. There will not be an ethics question on the exam. We're business people. You shouldn't know ethics. Go. Different types of auctions? No, not on this exam. I could do something on the final about, remember the Dutch, English, and sealed bid auctions? Not going
to
ask it on this exam. Go.
Different.
The difference between money and capital markets. You need to know the broad difference. I'm not saying that it's something that you have to know, but it's worth it for you to know. Capital markets versus money markets. That kind of thing. Just so you show you. At some point, I am going to want you to show me that you know that the word money is always used, but it's really technically not what the right word in some contexts. Other questions? Go. I would, first of all, make sure that you listen to first two or three lectures, because I just bitch about priority of claim there. And how cash flow is distributed, what choices a corporation has. But you're obviously going to want to listen to all of them again just to relive the dream. Go. No. This is look, I'm the star here. Screw that textbook. Now, look, I beat you up all the time with those online tests and all that kind of stuff. This is where you show me that you've been in my class and you're listening, because in the real world, yeah, you got to read a lot of books, but boy, if the boss talks to you, you'd better be able to listen and know what he said. And this is where I'm getting you ready for that. Go.
About identifying stock information, like data and key ratio.
Should you be able to do that at this point?
I mean, yeah, but we'll be
impressed. Not in real great deep detail. I'm not detailing those kinds of... This is not where I'm testing you on how perfectly you can do formulas, okay? This is testing you on how well you understand concepts that I've been teaching in the classroom. Go. Capital expenditures? Okay. Are you going to eat tonight? What are you going to eat? Huh? You're going to cook. Oh. Yeah, man, but you make nasty stuff. Okay. Have you ever eaten a cheeseburger? Good. You did. What kind? Where? Really? Was it any good? Oh, anyway, focus. Please watch what you're doing. Okay, that is not a capital expenditure because it was here and it was gone. You burned it up. You will use all of those calories within a few days. You see, a capital expenditure is just an amount of money where the benefit from it lasts for a very long time. Now, mind you, there have been a few times in my life when I ate White Castles and they lasted a long time. I mean, in fact, the doctor said, you keep coming back here for 2 years after that 30 case of extra onion cheese White Castle burger things. Anyway, when I, in my own work, I bought a new camera, $4,500. That's a capital expenditure because I will use it over a very long period of time. A money expenditure would be when I, yeah, actually, there's not a... Oh, a money expenditure when I buy the gasoline to drive out into the country to find that kind of artwork. Okay, yeah. Other questions? Yeah. Go ahead. Like what? What do you mean?
For example, you mentioned was an appropriate investment.
Those were...
Is there two or three you'd recommend?
No, because some of them you would actually... They're part of the same thing. Appropriateness, responsibility, diversification. Those are all part of the same concept. Yeah, that's kind of a good question because in some cases I can break it up, but it would go together in an appropriate way in a naturally good answer. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Well, no. I'm not going to give you an answer, but I'm going to certainly ask you this. Okay, I just started extending credit on my sales. Okay, so last year I had sales of $8,000, but $2,000 of that was credit sales. So, is it appropriate for me in analyzing cash flow to recognize revenue of $8,000, or should I take away the $2,000 that didn't actually happen? In other words, that accounts receivable went up by $2,000, so that is an upstroke in net working capital that I should subtract because that shows that something in revenue didn't really happen in cash. You follow that? That's why you have to take the difference in net working capital for this year versus and last year. Because if net working capital went up, that means money showed up on my revenue that really didn't happen. If net working capital went down, that means that money came in that I had already recognized in a previous year. So I get more money. So in other words, if my accounts payable go up this year, that's money that I said I paid that didn't really happen. So that would mean that my net working capital went down this year, which actually increased my cash flow this year because something that I said I paid, I didn't pay. Yeah.
Do we have to know anything about that
lecture
you did on the Fed?
No. I will not ask about the Fed. Not directly, anyway. Yeah.
Anything about time value of money?
Someone else asked that. Only you've got to understand that money now is not worth the same as the same amount of money later. Money does not carry its value through time. And it loses more value the riskier its future is. Anything else you got for me? Study. I'll be in my office, obviously, during my office hours before class on Thursday. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.